Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
Commodity Week was recorded Thursday, October the 2nd. The combines are rolling, the grain stocks report has been released, and the market is lower. Or is it? You'll find out today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the marketplace with Dan Zwicker. He's at CGP Enterprises out of Mandeville, Louisiana. Wayne Nelson from L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. And of course, Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson from right here in Champaign County. As usual, and I think, Wayne, I'll start with you on a list of things that might be worth talking about this week. Do you want to start with what?
Should they store or sell corn and beans?
Okay. Dan?
What kind of upside potential is there once we get through harvest?
Oh, nice. I like it. And Jackie?
What to do with those November puts? A lot of people are talking about it, trying to figure out if they should just lift them or if they should roll them out. Certainly could hit on the grain stocks report a bit. Upcoming October, supply and demand that's going to be coming up. And FSA acres.
Yeah, those are all on my list. Okay, let's start with the store or sell up front. Because, of course, farmers will be harvesting both corn and soybeans across the Midwest. And I don't know, does it make a difference where you're located as to whether you store or sell at all? Does that really make much of a difference in this process? And I know it does for the bases, but is there much of a difference from one side of the nation to the other? The guys out west and in Minnesota, Iowa, Nebraska seem like they tend to store and keep it in storage longer than the guys that are east of the Mississippi River. And I don't know, Dan, does it really make much of a difference where you're located?
Well, I think it does. It probably depends if you're in an area that it has probably more storage than it would normally have in an average harvest, or if it's in a deficit storage area. There are spots throughout the Corn Belt that back in the 80s, built a lot of storage space, and a lot of the grain reserve was stored in that, and a lot of those storage facilities are still operable, and I think the storage rates in some of those areas are probably much more reasonably priced than probably in the areas where we have probably a shortage of storage. So, if you're in one of those areas where there is adequate storage available, and it is not totally outrageous, and I'm not too sure what the market is, I would think that you would have a reasonable shot at repaying that storage back. And, making maybe a little bit more than that in the long run. But I wouldn't expect it to happen between now and January 1st. But you never know. You got to keep in mind that this is a global market. Granted, we do have a big crop here. But we are using, 35 to 40 million bushels of corn a day, which equates to $250 million a week. So we are using a billion something a month. And so a lot of this excess inventory can disappear in a hurry. And once it's in storage, the market has to bid it out of storage. So I do think that there is reason to believe that storage could pay as long as you don't get hooked into a real high storage rate.
Where would those areas around the nation that might have excess storage capacity be that would pay? You said there are some regions. Do you have some identified places that do that?
Well, we have one.
Yeah.
CGB did buy the Toomey Grain operation over in Gladstone, which is west of Monmouth. The Toomey brothers, when they were operating that, they built a lot of storage and held a lot of the grain reserves. So we do have a lot of storage available in that part of the state. So that's one of them, and I'm sure there are several of them around. It's just I just don't know necessarily where they're at.
Yeah, so really the farmers have to think about their local areas and whether they seem to have more storage and larger grain elevators than other places. I would think, for instance, here in Champaign County where we have the Andersons with a large storage capacity might be one of those other places too. So that they might be able to take advantage of that. Wayne, you put this one on your list, store or sell?
Well, I think, Dan brought up a real good point in that if there's cheap commercial storage, mine is more so along the line of thinking, especially in our area, we want to take advantage of the storage on farm because we've got a lot of processors in our area over here. We've got the ethanol plants. We've got the bean processing plants, in Lafayette and Frankfort and that way. So we're wanting to fill all our on-farm storage, but most of the storage over here, they're going for DP, and it's pretty high rates. And I think that we'd be better to market our grain as we come over here on the excess where we can't store at home and look at buying some of it back either on the border with calls.
You've been traveling, Jackie, across the Midwest, and you do that fairly often, actually from Pennsylvania out to, I don't know, Idaho. So you have a good idea of what storage facilities look like across a large part of the nation that raises corn and soybeans and is capable of housing a crop. And do you see places that are better capable of taking in this size crop and holding it, and is that worthwhile?
Well, I think if you're going to do something like that, you most certainly have to protect the carry in the market in the corn, especially corn. In general, I'd have to say it comes down to your, just like Dan and Wayne have both said, it comes down to the individual area you agree in. If you're facing dump charges that are going to be somewhere from 15 to 20 cents and flat fees of 15 to 30 cents, I believe you've got to really think twice about whether or not you want to DP it or you want to do anything when it comes to commercial storage. And then you, sell it across the scale and look for an opportunity to buy a call perhaps down the road when we find our bottom. And we will find our bottom at some point. But, the big risk with storage at this stage is, and I agree with Dan, we're chewing through corn. There's no question about that. We put another, we raised the U.S. dollar from 86 to 90, and our chewing is going to slow down a bit. There's no question. And there has to be a concern when you look at the ethanol futures and how ethanol futures have really taken a dive this week. The ethanol industry is one that we really depend on. So if they're making, if they're up against that decision, it's got to be just based on what their area is. If they've got opportunities where storage costs aren't much different than they were a year ago or maybe slightly higher, they might want to do that, but then protect the carry.
Well, Jackie, you sound like you're more pessimistic still of the marketplace. And I'm wondering about this, the FC Stone numbers that were released this week were overwhelmingly bearish. Sometimes that seems to put a bottom in the marketplace. How did you receive that number, especially the average yield for the state of Illinois?
Well, I'll tell you what, I think that, the market just looked at it and said it's just another big number. We really can't switch attach very much to it until we actually know where we are acre-wise, and that's what we're going to be looking at as we go into October. And the fact that FSA, waived the fees so guys didn't have to certify just adds more problems to it. In general, do I think something like that could happen? What FC Stone has talked about? Well, I guess, if you look at the Illinois numbers and the numbers we hear coming in are pretty phenomenal. Second largest growing state in the United States. And if you look at their 178, let's say we even come in at where the USDA is at 194. Take 16 bushels and add it to every acre that we've got and take that and add that to the other states and cover those same amount of acres in the other states. you could easily see that. You know, when you're hearing numbers coming out of Pennsylvania that are in above the 200, it just makes a person really sit up and listen and say, from a risk management standpoint, you cannot take a chance and not make good decisions on what you're going to do, especially if you're going to store grain.
I want to stay with you for just a second, Jackie. How much downside do you think is at risk at this point?
Well, I think that, you know, I'm of more of the inclination to say that $3 area is probably where we're at now. And I think that we could put in a near-term low. If you look at previous years when we've had really large crops, we normally would put in a what we call a harvest low right now and then put in a lower low in December. I could certainly see that. So I'd say in the $3 area at this point, as we get into the December, maybe we could be looking down in the 280s and the 270s.
Wayne, I want you to take this up, price for the month of October as it relates to crop insurance, because this is crop insurance setting month. And can you, and I'm sure you've run some numbers, but what does the harvest and these large yields look like, and what kind of prices might help in terms of an insurance payment over time? What definitely does not help? And then we'll come back to Dan. And so we've got the bottom side. Let's see if we can find Dan and maybe turn a little friendly too. But let's start with you, Wayne, on crop insurance and what the month of October means to folks.
Well, of course, the fall or harvest price is determined during the month of October for both the corn and the beans. And, of course, we've had a large percentage drop. And we know that there isn't going to be hardly any production or yield type claims this year, but there are a lot of people hoping to collect some insurance because of the price drop. And, of course, the lower we could go here during the month of October, if you've got, you know, the 85% level and some pretty good APHs, you know, we'd like to see it go down to 275 or so on the corn. Will it go there or not? The worst thing that can happen is a little fake bump up here. They don't get any insurance money, and it drops out of bed in December like Jackie talked about.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now let's turn our attention to Dan Zwicker, because I think you're a little friendlier to the marketplace than at least maybe Jackie is at this point, and I don't know about Wayne yet.
Well, let's say I'm wanting to let up on the pressure a little bit on the downside. I think the fact that the short wasn't able to enhance his position any from the FC Stone estimate of nearly 15 bushel corn crop and a 4 billion bushel soybean crop kind of implies to me that the short crowd is plenty short, and they may even have some extra shorts on the table. So that's one thing I noticed when a market, you know, can't respond to bearish news when it's going lower, and it can't respond to bullish news when it's going up. That tells you that you're at a point where the market could do something a little different. And I'm not sure what Informa Economics is going to come out with, and USDA, but the last time in September, FC Stone was the largest of the three, and if that is the case, then maybe we may see a little smaller number from the Informa group and maybe the USDA. Now, the trade's still going to try to poo-poo it, but you can't fight the numbers in the short run. So that could trigger that October bounce that Wayne is fearful of to kind of avoid any kind of insurance payment. But from a cyclical point of view, the market's not quite ready to turn, but it could turn up. And like I mentioned on my Thursday afternoon comments, we're only down 3 cents for the week, and a good rally could close out this corn market with a weekly reversal to the upside. I think wheat and soybeans have got one in place, even though we do have one day yet to go. And I think that's a strong signal that this market's getting ready to have some kind of short covering blow up here.
Wayne, what ground do you want to stake out for yourself in the up, down, sideways move for the corn market?
Well, I was going to ask Dan how much of a move up he thought it would be here along the way on this move up, and if there would be just a, say, a weak move up and then turn around, and if we get harvest pressure, move on down, or else we would go up and hold it. And I guess that's, you know, more or less. We felt earlier that we were going to challenge the 308 and the Dease corn, you know, and probably overdo it a little bit and not maybe go through $3 now. We thought that $9, we did approach it with a 904. We didn't know if we could stay above $9 here until we got back in the field really aggressively and got to about 50% harvested. So those were our interim lows. But, you know, as we look at the numbers, they can go lower than that with the supply we have at the end of this harvest. There's no place for a lot of stuff to go.
Yeah, and I agree with that. I mean, the futures market, the trend is still down. All of my indicators are down, but it wouldn't take too much to take me out of my short positions. And I think I'll probably get out about everything probably tomorrow if we have any kind of follow through. But that doesn't mean the system won't go back short again on Monday. I suppose initially, if we would trigger a pop here over the next 10 days or 15 days, I'd say probably 350 Dease corn is in the realm of possibilities. With today's volume and activity, you could see a 20-cent blow up. And I think that would possibly be in the cards. I think once harvest is complete, it wouldn't surprise me if we would see a move back above the 370, a move back into the 370s, 380s, and then a more normalized basis, which would be, you know, back to 350 type cash corn. I think that's reasonable, at least expectations at this point in time, the way I look at the market.
Jackie, have I painted you too much as a Debbie Downer? Are you less so than I have painted you so far?
Well, I guess I look at what we're seeing in the market today as, you know, a bounce off of weather, a lack of harvest pressure. You know, in the guys that I talk to, there's an awful lot of people who are selling grain across the scale. You know, anytime you sell, they're going to sell to protect themselves from having to pay too much. And I think until we get to a point where we're really in earnest putting the majority of what's left into the bins, we're going to continue to see that. So I'd have to say that I think sideways to lower isn't at all out of the realm as far as I'm concerned. I don't agree with you, Dan. I mean, I agree we could get a bounce. I think we will, but boy, I think we're going to at the time get back to 370 unless the dollar really reverses itself.
Well, and, you don't need to agree with me.
Well, I know that because I never do. Well, I do once in a while, but not very often.
I think you heard 370, and you said 350, right, Dan?
Cash, yeah, back to the 350 cash type market.
370, 350 cash.
But 370s yeah. In the futures, once harvest is complete,
right.
Once we find everything a home for, lead futures could go back into the 370s, 380 type deal.
Yeah. I think that when you look at the big picture, too, you know, I don't doubt one bit that we're probably going to see quite a few producers who are going to let grain stand out in the fields, not necessarily in Illinois, Iowa, or Indiana, but I think in other states where drying charges are high, which, you know, of course, you always have field loss when you've got that. You've got guys. I had a guy the other day that actually told me that he was going to fill his bathtub in his jewelry box with corn because he was never going to sell, no matter what, until the price went higher. And we all know what the handwriting on the wall is when you come to that, because we've seen it. We saw it back in the late 90s. We saw it in early 2000. They didn't sell when they had the opportunity, and then when the price was even lower, that's when they were forced to sell at a certain point in time. So, you know, I think in general, we're going to have to trust. What I'm hearing out here in Iowa today is that, you know, they're back to option on corn just because of the fact that farmers have gone to doing nothing but harvesting beans. And
yeah.
So there's not any corn coming in. You know,
yeah, see,
and I
oats,
think
oats,
see that on and off.
See, oats knows the direction. See, oats has got a major outside up week and up 15 cents or so for the week. So oats knows the direction.
It does now. I'll make sure I write that down. Oats knows.
You know,
I see some guys who've lost their entire belt because of oats, you know, because it knew. But, yeah, you know, I just think in general we're going to have periods of time where when the farmers don't sell, we're going to either see basis get better to try and entice, corn in. And so, but you know, didn't you think, you know, when you looked at the 37.5% of the old profits that the farmers still sitting on right now, as of the report, that's not a little amount. And so, that concerns me when we move forward here. That only adds to the problem when it comes to storage.
All right, turn your attention to the soybean market where you at. Well, hang on. I want to go through one more corn item before I get to the soybean market. Both of these are related to the USDA grain stocks figures. In the feed and residual number, they took out, about 50 million bushels, I think, of usage for livestock out of old crop. And if you just roll that forward, so you add 50 million to grain stocks in the new crop, and then would you continue to take 50 extra million out for feed and residual use for next year? Could you come up with another 100 million bushel? I think that's the numbers that Daryl's using. He told me earlier in the week. And it just seems like that there might be, not only do we have a big crop, but we all also might be adding to our carry just based on consumption patterns in the livestock sector.
Well, without getting too deep in the weeds, I guess I would question what our feed and residual number is going to be as far as the feed side of it. Yes, you can argue some of it went backwards into last year's marketing year because we were at pipeline, so X amount of bushels, whether it was 300 or 400 or whatever, went backwards into the 13 crop year. And as far as feed usage goes, I can't really justify increased feed usage, but I know that's the way it's going to be explained on the balance sheet. The quickest way out of this hole, because I don't see it in the export market unless we get into some South America weather problems or Southern Hemisphere weather problems, is to probably make these pork chops look like T-bones and make the T-bones look like keyboards. Take the weight of our livestock way up there to increase the tonnage of meat and the consumption of corn. So with this cheaper corn, you can see that the livestock market is responding to it. I mean, the feeder cattle broke sharply to the upside here today. And I think that's going to encourage your livestock people to feed this stuff as much as they can and go as high as they can on their weights. That will, that's the quickest way to get ourselves out of the current mess, because ethanol production is probably right at capacity. You might be able to squeeze a little bit more out of it. Export demand, hopefully these lower prices can keep our share that we had last year, but I don't think so. Not what I see right now, but if you'd get into a South American weather problem, that could, flip the switch the other way pretty quickly.
Has the poultry industry responded at all yet? They're the easiest and quickest way to put more bushels through an animal.
Well, there's really no big evidence that they're doing big jumps. And I think, everything, the problem with expansion, you can expand, but the facilities, you have to build facilities. And any kind of new facility, takes time, whether it's a hog confinement outfit or whether it's a new chicken facility. Everything takes time. So, there is room to, take current facilities and take them to the maximum, but I don't see anybody willing to jump out and spend, a couple million dollars on new facilities just yet,
Well, yeah, and I agree with you, Dan. There's talk right now. In fact, I just heard that there's two new ethanol plants that they're talking about putting in, one up in South Dakota and one down in Southern Illinois, actually. And so that's right.
But that's 2 years out, though. See, that's 2 years out.
I mean, that's what I was going to say. You may think I'm bearish, but the reality is that, I think a couple of years, we got a couple really rough years ahead of us. But I think coming out of that, we could really be doing very, very well. You know, the egg sets have been up a little bit, but they're not, you know, we've got some poultry clients, and that's still a very difficult business. There's just no two ways about it. But, and the hog thing, if we don't get hit with PDV again, that would be good. There's a lot of expansion going on out in hogs. It's unbelievable. In fact, we just talked to a client out here in Iowa who is building a couple of facilities that we were down to see, and the guys that's working there, this guy's got 600 people on his crew, and basically 30 guys on a crew is what it is, and all of the crews are out, and they're building all over in the hog situation, all the way even down toward Texas. And so maybe you'll get one near Waco. I don't know, you know, but, you know, they basically are saying, you know, that's, and when you look at the dairy industry is expanding like just absolutely craziness, you know, because we've got $20 milk right now, but let's take a look down the road, you know, and unfortunately when that all starts to hit, that's the hard part. We increase consumption, but in the products that they produce, it certainly doesn't increase the price eventually.
You know, one of the things I think we better remember is it's nice we're talking about all this expansion, but before we had China taking a lot of our DDGs, and since they sort of pushed back on that, a lot of our corn consumption went down after they stopped taking DDGs because our farmers and livestock people were using the DDGs. Until we reopen that market, it's still a big drain on the corn use.
That's the truth. You know, they've dramatically increased their sorghum intake. You know, the exports on sorghum are just like through the roof. So, you know, you wonder if what they're doing is they're just playing the hiding game. But I agree with you. I think, you know, the whole thing, and look at how long, you know, the ethanol industry depended on the DDGs to be the actual profit driver for them. It isn't an easy situation. Let's just put it that way.
Okay, now let's turn our attention to the soybeans. Wayne, USDA and the grain stocks report came forward and said, and I don't know that I've ever actually seen this before, but in the executive summary, they put out an updated supply and demand table with the grain stocks in them that shows at least for the period until we get to the 10th day of October and the next WASD report comes out, just 92 million bushels of soybeans were left in the bin at the end of this marketing year, and that would be something like a stocks-to-use ratio for the year of 2.6. Unbelievable in terms of how low it was.
We found out how low the pipeline can get, or how small the pipeline is. I mean, if we're really there, and let's face it, we had to jump a whole bunch of bringing beans that we supposedly had that they said we didn't have from the 13 crop to even get us to that low number. So, you know, how empty was the pipeline? I think that somebody made a comment, though, you know, that's in the rearview mirror, and we see a tsunami of beans coming at us in the windshield.
Well, one thing that, you know, go ahead, Wayne.
So that's just it. I mean, basically, we paid for that with $4 over beans. We had $2 over beans, $3 over beans, and $1 over beans for the first 2 weeks of harvest to get the pipeline filled back into the processors. Cargill was closed down yesterday. They didn't take any beans in Lafayette. Three or four of the elevators say they can't get trucks or the places aren't open to haul to. Without this rain that come in here at the end of the week, we were going to be jammed up with beans over here in Indiana.
Yeah. I've been hearing that in an awful lot of places. This rain in some ways is a godsend for the elevators to get caught up. But I was shocked.
It'll be interesting to see that balance sheet, how USA actually balances the bean deals out with 92 million Indy stocks, what they use for imports, what they actually use for exports, because I do believe their balance sheet all year long was misleading and did not do the farmer any favor of indicating that Indy stocks were going to be much tighter, and they kept pumping out that 130. And anybody that was on the ground knew that Indy stocks was going to come in lower
And so I think USDA did a disservice on that balance sheet. If indeed the ending stocks number is 92, as what they reported, and I guess I'd be a little disappointed. I say I'm disappointed in the World Board the way they handled this balance sheet season for soybeans.
You know, Dan, let me ask you a question, though. You know, when you look at the grain stocks report, we saw 375 over in November beans. Are we still have farmers sitting on 23% of the crop? So how much of a difference would it have made?
Well, all I'm saying, no, USDA with their balance sheet was sending the market the wrong signal. And I just, I mean, it just goes to show, and I've had people tell me that this new administration, since they came in, a lot of the government agencies have been under political pressure to publish numbers that they wanted published rather than what the actual numbers were. And so I don't think you can believe anything that comes out of USDA, anything come out of the Labor Department, anything comes out of Commerce. I just don't think, you can just look at USDA's numbers over the past 6 weeks, how volatile they have been. And it's strange that they've just become volatile more so over the past 6 years than they were prior to that.
Well, on their behalf, I got to tell you that I don't agree with you on that one, Dan. And the research.
Well, I know you got to take that research side. But
the research. Well, I work for the government. I'm here to help you. But the research upstairs from the Ag Economist, they've looked at this. The U of I has looked at it. Other places have looked at it. Those numbers are pretty solid. They, you know, and statistically they should be right. And those guys, they don't come under that kind of pressure, at least.
I'm talking about the way they start out the growing season. And, you know, if you look at the final numbers, fine, but I don't think they do a very good job of estimating in advance. And I think they send the market the wrong signal at times.
You mean the size of the crop?
The size of the crop and the size of the demand
and the consumption demand, but the numbers.
Right.
But when they finish up, when we got to 92
right.
million bushels, that
yeah,
that grain
when
stocks
they finish
numbers,
up, I mean,
that's,
yes,
that's a good
but
number.
What I'm saying is the balance sheet that USDA was using all year long was misleading.
Well, they increased the size of, and they knew it. They increased the size of their soybean crop. From
well,
last year.
True, but they also said that we were going to have a carryout of 130 and that we were going to import 90 million. I'm anxious to see
how they balance it out.
What they publish.
What changes
October
10th?
I don't believe 90 million bushels of beans were ever going to come in here. I think they're lucky if they got 70 in. So I'm curious to see what they come up with the final number.
Yeah,
on
so the 92 million, let's see. That's what's actually in the bin. I think that number, that will be the number they work with. It's just a matter of how they get to it now, right? I think that's correct.
Yeah, so I think they were misleading the trade by telling the trade that 92 million was going to come in here, and they should have been telling the trade that the carryover was going to be lower. Therefore, that took marketing opportunities away from the farmer.
Jackie, you were wanting to jump in. Do you have something to add?
Well, I did. I just wanted to say, you know, I don't consider it misleading if you look at a deviation on a report that when it starts out is 10%. You know, in other words, the crop could be 10% higher or 10% lower. The unfortunate part is people don't talk about that. They look at the number that they see on that page, which is the average in the middle, and say, that's what USDA is saying. No, that's not. USDA is saying, and the wider the deviation, the more they're saying, we know, this is how little we know about what the farmer is really going to do.
No, what I'm saying is they're misleading on the demand projections, the consumption. They were very misleading, and then they were trying to import 90 million bushels of beans, which never did materialize. Like I said, I think they're lucky if they've got 72 in here. We'll have to see what they admit to.
So you think the demand was higher, and imports.
They had to raise the crop. They raised the crop, what, 70 million?
Yeah.
Yep, they did.
And then they come in with 92, and they've been publishing 130 all summer long. Now, that's a 40 million bushel miss.
But why didn't more the commercials import the beans? Why didn't the commercials actually import the beans? Because they could afford to import the beans.
They didn't need to import. They didn't need to import the beans because the crop was larger. Oh, they imported some. I mean, they got like 70 in maybe, but USDA was telling us that they were going to get 90 in.
Well, they would have if the exporters hadn't known. The exporters already knew that the crop was left there from the year before.
Well, but the USDA was misleading everybody on their balance sheet is what I'm telling you. You know, I think it was a bad season.
We'll admit there was an awful lot of adjustments made on the last report.
Right. And then it'll be interesting to see what they do with acreage, whether or not they fess up right away or they wait till January before they fess up on the acreage.
Okay. Along that line, let me ask Dan a short question, just answered shortly. Should they reduce the harvested acres for corn and beans?
They may not do anything on October because they say.
No, the question was, do you think they should?
At the end of the day, they're going to have to.
Why? I mean, what
in January?
What? Just because the FSA, which might be incomplete numbers, are low because all the numbers aren't in. That's what we keep hearing, that the FSA numbers don't have all their paperwork in. So it could be they could be close to right. They don't have to be wrong.
Well, we'll see.
I'm asking what Dan thinks the real acreage is. I'm not saying what the government's going to say. I'm asking what Dan thinks.
Oh, I think the acres is at least 2 million less on corn and 1 million less on beans.
Okay, that was the question. And
I
you answered it. Very
miss.
Good.
You know,
no, I kind of thought you were asking which month they were going to change it in it, because they could do it in October, November,
Dan
or January.
Thinks.
And I think last year's corn numbers were way too high. We did not raise that production number last year. That production number, last year's production number on corn is too high because they used too high acreage, the harvested acreage number.
Wait, then how tight was the corn supply, do you suppose, when it came in? That would be harder
the ending stocks number, I'm not necessarily going to argue with the 1-2 number that they came out with because, a billion bushels is roughly, 1 to 1-2 is usage. And it's very difficult to get ending stocks below usage levels. And see, that's why the year before were published in 800. Well, we probably vacuumed 400 million backwards into last year's crop year. And that's why the ending stock shows 800. We really had, the supply on hand September 1 was probably 1-2.
Okay. I want to go through one final thing, and this came from you, Dan, but I want to start with Wayne on it. And that's the potential for the market to move either up or down after harvest is complete. And let's talk not about short term or through the end of the year, but from January to April.
Well, unfortunately, generally when we have a crop that's this big and we've got piles of corn all over the ground or the bean yields like we've seen this year, unfortunately, instead of seeing the carry stay, we seem to bring the month down as we get there and go on out. I think there'll be a little appreciation because we are going to see a lot of farmer holding and a lot of farmer storage this year. And that's going to be the advantage to the farmer, is that he is going to be holding a lot of the grain, and they're going to be stubborn sellers, and they're going to have to pay up along the way. And the other thing that we got going for us is ethanol plants that need corn every day, not just to buy it as the price spikes or something like that. And there's going to be some good prices for people within driving to an ethanol plant, a lot better than those that aren't. Will Russia take over the international trade? Will Brazil come in and take over the international trade and keep us the high person because of our freight rates? That's the question. But I think we should see an appreciation once the bin doors get locked.
Jackie?
Well, I think we'll see the normal that we normally see in the holiday time frame when bin doors are closed. People don't want to be doing anything, and that's when there'll be opportunities. But I still think that any bounce up that we get is going to be a selling opportunity. And, you know, when it comes right down to it, it doesn't make a difference what any of us think about USDA. It all comes down to profitability for the farm. And so he's got to know what it's costing him at the store, when he's going to need money, because normally when he needs money, everybody needs money. And so from that January time frame on, we may not get the glut that we normally see if we don't have an immense amount of people who DK this year. You know, normally you get pressure in January because of it. Maybe we won't get it. But, you know, if you think back to the late 90s, what did we have? We had a situation where the futures went higher and the basis got worse. Or the basis got better and the futures got worse. So I think the farmer's got to have himself prepared for anything that can happen. I really hope that Dan is right and that we can get back to 370. That would be awesome. But it also would reward some guys who really have not stepped up and did what business people do, and that is manage their risk.
And Dan?
Well, I'm going to be a bull anytime after the first year. And I think you're talking about spring months and summer months. By then, I think we'll have an uptrending 5.5-year cycle in place, and I think we'll have an uptrending 39-month cycle in place in beans. And I myself would be planning to play 2015 from the long side after we get through the winter.
Wow. The last time you were a bull didn't work out too well.
We can't lose them all.
Hey,
I think everybody will be so bearish and so short that everything will be it'll be ripe. And I think the dollar, the current rally in the dollar, is just another bubble. I mean, ever since 9/11, all we've had is bubbles here and a bubble there and everywhere a bubble. And I think the dollar run right now is another bubble that's going to bust. And that's going to make U.S. grains real competitive in the world market.
Jackie, one item that I missed that was first on your list, what to do with November puts.
Well, that's been a question from when I did one of the radio programs, we had guys that called in and were asking, what do you do with that pesky November put? Well, I think when you look at beans and the potential downside risk that we have in beans, you roll it out probably to March because it gets you through that February time frame. When you look at the fact that Argentina's sitting on 790 billion bushels of old profit, they'll be heading into new crop at that point in time. We know that the Brazilian farmer is not selling new crop. He's still sitting on some old crop. You know, there's plenty of things that can bring pressure into the marketplace. So it is, you're in time value decay right now with those November puts. They expire the third week of this month. Just move them out to March, sit back, and wait to see what happens.
Time for a final word from each of you, I suppose, and I'll start this one and simply say stay safe on the combines. During my show in the afternoon for the closing market report, if you listen to it live or if you want to, you can listen to it on that Bluetooth in your combine after it's up around 3 o'clock in the afternoon Central Time. Stop the combine, and if you go to sleep, that's the right thing to do. Take a 20-minute nap during that show. I don't care. I'd rather have you safe and make it through the season than have you not make it through the season safely. Let's see. Anybody else got a final word? Dan?
I would just second that. We got plenty of time. The weather pattern does seem to be very favorable toward harvest. Yes, interruptions of rain is actually good, so we can get a little rest. So take your time and be safe.
Wayne Nelson?
Yep. I think that we want to watch the weather very closely here. The GFS is talking about more weather delays, the European not as much weather delays, the Canadian somewhere in between. And if we have a lot of weather delays, I think Dan could be right with a little pop-up in the prices here.
And Jackie Vex.
Yeah, Bob, I'll second your be safe. That's the most important thing right now.
That wraps up the October 2nd edition of Commodity Week. Our panelists have included Jackie Vakes of Stewart Peterson from right here in Champaign County, Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana, and Dan Zwicker at CGB Enterprises from Mandeville, Louisiana. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.